Sleep is an essential function. It allows our body and mind to recharge. Good sleep also helps keep our immune system strong so we can fight off infection and disease to stay healthier. In this episode of Behind the Brand, I want to introduce you to Matteo Franceschetti, who has kind of changed my life in a big way with his direct-to-consumer product brand, 8Sleep. If you've watched my last few videos, you know that I'm on a new health journey of sorts. And that's because for the past few years, I've really struggled with bad headaches and now mild sleep apnea. Quick disclaimer, I am not a doctor, obviously, or a medical expert, but I do want to share my personal experience in the hopes that it helps maybe just a few of you. I went to see my doctor about the headaches. Actually, several doctors. I saw a neurologist who gave me an MRI and checked my brain, a cardiologist for my carotid arteries and heart, a dentist for my teeth, optometrist for my eyes, nutritionist to check to see if I have any food allergies, an endocrinologist to check my blood levels and other hormones, and finally a pulmonary doctor for sleep apnea. He prescribed a CPAP machine. That's a machine that flows oxygen through a mask that you wear at night so that you don't stop breathing. That's kind of what apnea is. And if you have apnea from, mild to severe, you could wake up 10, 20, 30, 50 times a night and really not even know it. You wake up feeling fatigued, like you were hit by a truck, and it could actually be pretty serious and affect your heart eventually. Now, don't get me wrong. Doctors and other trained medical experts are amazing. My sister is a nurse at Stanford Hospital, and she definitely saves lives on the daily. But in my specific case, none of the doctors that I paid treatment for were able to cure me. They just threw pills at me or a CPAP machine, and nothing really worked. Here's what actually did make a difference. The first thing I did was I changed my diet and eating habits. I started doing intermittent fasting because that's what worked for me. I cut out all desserts and most sugar. Now, not including fruit and other natural sources. I still love fruit and eat lots of it. I started going to the gym and lifting heavier weights 4 to 5 days a week. That's like squats, bench press, all this kind of stuff. And I also walked on the treadmill. I started taking vitamin supplements like vitamin B, vitamin D, along with more electrolytes, this drink I'm drinking called Element. It has magnesium, potassium, and sodium. I started taking cold showers every morning and doing the Wim Hof method of breathing. When I saw good results with that, I added a cold plunge to my routine. And if you haven't seen what cold plunge is, you can take a look at my last video. And I found this amazing bed made by Matteo's company at 8Sleep. It not only tracks my sleep quality, but thermoregulates my body temperature. I was super interested in the thermoregulation because, my wife and I sleep in the same bed and we totally run at different temperatures. I like the fan on or the window wide open and she tends to run cold. With the 8Sleep bed, we're able to regulate the temperature on both sides, adjust it, and it runs automatically. Here's the result. I lost about 15 pounds in the first 3 months of doing this and started feeling great. My clothes fit loose. I had a new self-confidence that I hadn't had in a long time. And I was certainly, more optimistic and I had a great attitude. My sex drive improved a lot. I had fewer headaches and was sleeping through the night. And there's a lot more here to talk about with Matteo and the 8Sleep brand. Let's get into it.
Hi, hello. This is Matteo. I'm the CEO and co-founder of 8Sleep, and you're watching Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
Hey everyone, I'm Brian Elliott. Welcome to another edition of Behind the Brand. Matteo, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I usually ask my guests, how did you get this job?
I started the company, so everything started because I had an idea.
So for those who don't know your background, your context, let's take it back. Maybe right back to the beginning, the origin. And I'm always curious. I like to ask people what they were thinking about when they were younger, what they want to be when they grow up. Or what were you dreaming about? Your career, your occupation, your future? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I have always been driven. But when I was a teenager, I was an athlete. At a certain point, I realized I wouldn't become a pro. But I was not really thinking about my professional career. everything really changed at college after I read an article about lawyers. There were these lawyers working on IPOs and the biggest M&A deals in the world. And I was studying law at the time, and I say, oh, this is what I want to do. And so that really changed my mind, because to become one of those lawyers, you need to graduate with honor. You need to speak English. At the time, I was not speaking English. And so I said, okay, I need to nail these two things to then be able to become one of them. And that is how it started.
So where did you grow up, and what sport were you thinking about, or what sport were you playing?
Yeah, I grew up in Italy in a small town in the northeastern part. I started with ski. I was a ski racer. Then I really focused on tennis. So I was a tennis player for quite a long time. And then in my early 20s, I started racing with cars. And so I raced Italian and European championship.
Awesome. Who are you looking up to as a tennis player? Like, who are you watching and you want to be like?
Yeah, there were a couple of Italian players at the time, Andrea Gaudenzi, or there was Master. And so I was before the new wave of the Federer and the Nadal, but I admired those a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. And how about your parents? What did they do for work?
My dad was a lawyer. My sister is a lawyer, so she's still running the law firm of my dad. And my mom was a high school teacher, and then she became a college teacher. She teaches, or used to teach, history and Latin, which is pretty fun. Yeah.
And did they try and steer you in any particular direction? Like, did they say, you know, you should go be a doctor or an accountant or a plumber, or, you know, what did they push you in any particular way?
Yeah, I think there was this. It was given almost for granted I would become a lawyer, and I would probably work at the law firm of my dad. This is a small law firm in my hometown. That was what it was expected, right? You will have a good job, so now you will be able to pay your bills and live a good life.
Yeah, just follow your dad and take that path.
Yeah.
Safe, maybe less risk. And what did he say about you being an aspiring athlete? Did he just think that it was a hobby, and then you'd eventually, you know, come over to his side?
Yeah, I mean, my dad was really into sport, because he has been a skier too. He was admitted to the national ski team as a junior skier, and then he won 2 times the Italian championship as a race car driver. He was a gentleman driver, so he achieved that while he was a lawyer. But now he has always been in sport, and we were sharing this passion together. But the passion was probably always like a hobby, just played at a good level. And then in the meanwhile, you have a job that, again, is good enough to pay your bills and let you live your life. But my parents never really thought of working probably as hard as I do. They always thought, oh, if you work that hard, it's probably because you don't have anything else, right? I remember when I was a kid, and sometimes there was this gentleman who was coming. His office was on the same floor of my apartment, of the apartment of my family, and he was coming to work on Saturday and Sunday. And I remember that now, from my parents' perspective, was weird, that, you know, why he's coming here all the time, why he doesn't have anything else to do better than that. And now today I work really hard like that guy.
So why did you stop playing tennis and start driving? Did something happen in between?
I always wanted to honestly be a race car driver. My parents, for a reason that is still not super clear to me outside money, always push back. I don't understand, because my dad loves races, but they always push back. There is actually a nice story there, if you will want to know about how I got into racing. But that is what I wanted. Then in the meanwhile, I played tennis. At a certain point, I got 2 surgeries for my knee. It was also a time where, you know, playing that often while you're a teenager, 17, 18 years old, was becoming really heavy. And so I got tired of that. My knee kept hurting, and so I stopped around 18 years old.
Yeah. So tell me the story about how you got into racing.
So this is the funny story. So again, I wanted to race with go-karts, right? That is how you start. And my parents didn't want to buy me one. And so I was going to school, and every day they were giving me a small amount of money to buy some food while I was at school. And so I started saving all this money, and I didn't eat. And after 3 or 4 months, I went back to them. It was right before Christmas. And I say, look, I found this go-kart and I saved this money, like $300, whatever. It was a ridiculous small amount of money. But for me, it was huge because it was now saving every single penny. And so that is when I really convinced them, because they say, oh, wow. I mean, if you were able to put together now this amount of money, you did all these sacrifices, and now you also found what you want to buy. And so then for Christmas, I got my first go-kart.
That's awesome. Well, so forgive the stereotype of the Italian, typical Italian home or typical Italian mother. I can just imagine your mom saying something like, Matteo, why aren't you eating, my boy? You know, like that didn't happen. She didn't notice that you were getting thinner.
I don't know. Maybe she noticed. My parents were not the typical Italian stereotype, right? They were, I would say, kind of tough. In a positive way. But I think they appreciate it, right? At the end of the day, in my family, nothing was given for granted. So they didn't buy me stuff just because I wanted. And so in particular with my dad, it was really important to prove that I would be able to grind to get what I wanted. And then if he could afford it, he would help me in the last step.
Yeah. I'm guessing maybe their apprehension to you becoming a racer maybe had a little bit of something to do with safety, yeah?
Yeah, but you know, my dad was a ski racer, and so that is pretty dangerous. Then he raced with cars. I don't know. I still think it was mainly money. It's really expensive to become, you know, a car racing driver. And there were these other sports where I was doing well, and I could now do them in my own city, things like that.
Yeah. So that's interesting because it seems like, you know, I'm using some pop psychology here, but I'm reading into your personality. And it seems like once you focus on the goal, you'll stop at nothing to achieve it. You know, that's those small little signals seem to appear very early in your life. And it seems to be a pattern that continued throughout. And I also am sort of getting the impression that you don't really have much fear of failure or fear of risk. Talk about that for a second, because, you know, becoming an entrepreneur from the outside looking in, you know, by other people can be kind of scary at times. There's a lot of the unknown. It's high risk, maybe high reward, but also a lot of people fail. So did you learn some of these kind of emotional skills in your training to become a driver? And then did that translate into starting your own business? Talk about that.
Yeah, I think sport taught me a lot. And I agree with your assessment. Once I have a clear goal in my mind, I know I will figure it out. You know, if you were asking my wife, probably a trait about me is I never give up, right? As long as I want something, I'm going to make it happen. You don't know how. I will be creative to the extreme, but I will get it done. And I think I remember when I was like 12 years old that my tennis coach went to my dad and he told him that I was mentally really strong. That was one of my strengths, probably more than talent. And still today, I remember that thing, and I still believe that it's. I don't know if I convinced myself or it's true, but I believe that. And so that is giving me a lot of confidence. Sport, I always tell, when I do hiring, I always tell people that working a startup is like the closest thing to sport. And probably that is why I love it. Because you have ups and downs. You don't know what is coming, right? Like it's an injury when you're playing tennis. Now here something bad can happen. You start losing revenue or there are problems or you're running out of money or you lose a person who was critical for the company. But then you have to come back. And it's the same thing in sport. You will never keep winning. It will never be a linear growth. And so that is what I learned at the time.
Yeah, resilience is probably one of the most important traits. And that's very relatable because I feel like I've been through that as well. When I did my startup, I got knocked down many times, but it's all about getting up, right? It's, you know, after you get hit, then what do you do? You know, do you stay down and you're out, or do you get back up and keep fighting? That's awesome. Has there ever been a time outside of a experience of being injured, for example, that you had to quit something or pivot? And the reason I ask that is because I think a lot of people struggle with this idea. You know, my audience, they're entrepreneurs. Some of them are freelancers. Some of them are working for big companies. But also, they don't know how long to give this great idea before they pivot or quit. I can remember, for example, I've stayed at companies just a little too long. I wish I had quit, you know, maybe 2 years prior. I probably stayed just a little bit too long, you know. So can you talk about that at all? When to know when to quit or give up or pivot? What are the signals? How do you know?
I think you need to look at as many data points as possible, right? I wouldn't care too much about the feedback of people because, you know, there is the famous quote from Henry Ford, if you ask the people what they want, they will tell you they want a horse that runs faster, right? So if you have a vision, you need to stick with your vision. Then you need to talk to customers. You need to see data like from engagement to sales and everything else. But at the same time, you need to keep in mind that you will keep iterating forever. And so as long as you build the right team and as long as you are on a large market, just keep going and iterating until when you crack it. I think that is what we did at Aisleep or in my previous companies.
So talk about manufacturing, but also before we go there, how did you even decide to go into this space? Because, you know, I've talked to other founders who have disrupted what I would call boring businesses. Now, let me clarify this. Cell phones, mobile phones used to be a boring business, right? When BlackBerry was doing it or, you know, the Palm Pilot, it was still kind of a boring business until, you know, 2007 and Steve Jobs and Apple launches the iPhone. And suddenly mobile phones were not boring anymore. I can think of multiple industries that have been disrupted from, you know, socks, a company like Stance who makes sort of custom designed high-end cool socks. So how did you decide to get into basically improving people's sleep, mattresses, mattress technology, cooling, heating? How did you decide to get in?
Yeah, so there were two forcing functions. So the first one was I was working really hard and I started wondering why I had to sleep 8 hours. Could I compress that time to work harder? And so I started looking into, you know, medical literature, and I understood that there is no real need to sleep 8 hours. It's just that your body, that is what it takes for your body with no technology to recover. But then I started wondering, but my body is inefficient. Can technology accelerate this? And so then the next step on my mind was, why Elon Musk is taking me to Mars, but I still spend a third of my life on a piece of dumb phone with no technology? There is technology everywhere. And then you pretend to go to bed and wake up 8 hours later, fully refreshed, just hoping that your body was supporting you in this daily mission. And that is how I started looking at the market. Then from there, what we did, we built a prototype with my co-founder, Max. But at the time, on Sundays, myself and Max and Alexandra, who's the other one of the other co-founders, we were always hacking projects together, right? That is my wife and I, Alexandra is also my wife, right? We were doing hackathons, the two of us at home, sometimes on Sundays. And so with Max, we built this prototype. We organize a pajama party. We invite some friends. They come and try the prototype that Max built in the garage. And they love it so much that one of them give us a 25K check. But there was no company at the time, right? It was one of the side projects we were playing with. And so at that point, we say, well, you know what? Maybe we should start this project. But I would say we were really naive, meaning it's not that we really, you know, we have sit there and we say, oh, this great business plan and all that. Then what happened is the prototype had certain features and we launched with those features. But as we started talking to customers, we understood that the core feature everyone wanted was cooling. And that is how then we developed the second product, which is the current one, that has thermoregulation, so heats and cools your body during the night to improve your sleep performance.
So were you looking at other competitors or other products? Because I can think of, like, there's like the Chill Pad and some other people that kind of do cooling. Were you looking at those technologies too and using that as a springboard?
Not much. What we really thought was, okay, there is an insane demand from customers. It was really overwhelming, the demand for cooling. We thought that what was in the market from our perspective, right, it was not comparable to a Tesla or a Peloton of sleep. And we say, we want to build the Tesla / Peloton of sleep with these features that customers want. And we didn't really care about anyone else.
Let's roll this back a little bit, because there's still a gap between the time that you were racing and the time that you came to the United States and started 8Sleep. So bridge that gap for us a little bit, because I assume you still didn't speak English at the time you were racing cars. You sort of alluded that you went into law. Connect that story for us.
Yeah, so long story short, I started studying law because it was the obvious choice again. At the time I was racing with cars, most obvious choice was to join the law firm of my dad. I read this article. I never really loved the idea of becoming a lawyer like my dad, because I always wanted to do business. And so I read this article of these lawyers that were doing business, right? M&A and IPOs, working on the biggest transaction in the world. And as I read that, I said, this is what I want to do. This kind of lawyer is interesting to me. But again, to be one of those lawyers, there are very few. So you need to graduate with honor. You need to speak English. And so that really changed the trajectory. I was doing well at college, but I was not on a trajectory for honor. And so then, based on what now you said, once I have the goal, I go for it. So I graduated with honor. I launched a startup, and I made enough money to come to the U.S. with that startup. We were taking photographs in trucks. So we were going to car races. We were taking pictures, printing them, and selling them. It was an idea I had.
Put a timestamp on that. What year are we talking about?
2002 or 2003, somewhere around there.
So this is before, basically, the launch of social media. The internet's still just a baby, a few years old. There's no YouTube, no Facebook, no Instagram, no nothing. Okay. And no iPhone, by the way. Yeah.
No iPhone, nothing. So I make enough money, myself and my best friend. And then I graduated with honor. I found a SDSU, so in San Diego. There is a program for people that can come in, learn English. While I'm there, I found an internship. They didn't want to give it to me, but I insisted so much that for this sort of business organization. And the first goal was to call some of their customers, but my English was still so bad that when I was calling these people, I couldn't fully understand what they were telling me. But I do all this. I apply for these big law firms, and I get, I think, 3-4 interviews. And then I joined this one that is called Freshfields Brookhouse Deringer. There are four, they are called Magic Circle in the world. There are four UK firms. They are some of the largest in the world. So Freshfield was one of them, was actually the largest. So I get in, I work there for 2 years. Then my boss becomes the head of finance at another Magic Circle law firm. And I'm the only intern that he brings with him, a bunch of lawyers and myself, all the intern. I was not a lawyer yet, because in Italy you need to practice 2 years, then you do an exam, the bar exam, and then you become a lawyer. So I joined Allen & Overy, and then 2 years in, there is this unique, I would say, bubble in Italy, probably the only business bubble in the past 50 years about renewable energy. And so a lot of private equity funds come to Italy to buy land to then develop solar plants, because there were a feed-in tariff paid by the government that would pay extra money for solar energy. I started working on that at night, but at night, you know, in these law firms, you finish to work like at 10 p.m. And so I was working from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. as my co-founder at the time. And it gets to a point where this company starts making more enough money that I can quit my job and become a full-time entrepreneur. My mom didn't want, so my dad just died. My mom said, why would you do that? Being an entrepreneur is a stupid idea. No, if anything happens, we just lost your dad. There is no money. And, but that's what I wanted to do. And I say, best regards to the law firm. Because the point of my mind was, you're already doing well in the law firm. You can make great money here. It's a big deal, right? This law firm is really big. Why would you take the risk?
Can I just pause you there? Because that's it's a very subtle thing that you're talking about, but I think it's really important. What you did was extremely difficult. I mean, you sort of glazed over the fact that you did something that could potentially be very scary. You know, your dad just passed away. Your mom was obviously feeling vulnerable in that moment. And that was a difficult thing. But also, you know, it doesn't sound like you hesitated. You know, it sounds like you were focused and you didn't let the fear sink in. The fear of the unknown or the what ifs, you just kind of blew right through it, you know, and I think it takes an incredible amount of courage or stupidity. I don't know. You know, when I was younger, I didn't know any better. So I just, you know, went forward, but it sounds like you developed that courage as like a muscle, you know, and it sounds like you were practicing from a very early age so that when you had opportunity, when the opportunity was knocking, you were able to answer that and push through. I think you can't take that for granted. That was a lot of work that you did building your courage muscle in the very early years to be able to push through a very difficult time when the opportunity came.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. The framework I used at the time, so I think if I remember correctly, I had enough money for like 4 months in my personal bank account. And then the company had some money already. So I should be able to have a salary for like 6 months. And so my plan was that if things started failing, I could still try to go back to my boss and see if he could hire me. Which, by the way, sometimes, I think 2-3 times in the past 10-15 years, I had that dream that I had to go back to work at the law firm. Actually, yeah, it was a nightmare. It's like, no, I don't want to go back.
So that's interesting too. So almost like you're using the fear of having to go back to what you don't like as motivation to push you to do what you do want to do.
Yeah. Which I think there is Paul Graham who says that fear is one of the main drivers for entrepreneurs. They just don't want to fail in front of everyone. And even more than now working so hard to succeed is working so hard because of the fear to fail. So maybe there was that component.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, so you made it to the prestigious law firm. I also want to point out another kind of subtle lesson, and that is this idea of proximity. You know, you put yourself in a position to succeed, even though you were an intern, maybe you're getting the coffees or whatever you're doing, taking out the trash, who knows, a low position, but you were hanging around the right people. You were in the same proximity or area of someone who could then take you with them. And that's exactly what happened. You know, your boss left to another prestigious firm. You were the only intern that went with, but the only way you got that opportunity was to be humble enough and maybe smart enough, have the insight to like put yourself in the right place with the right people. And the reason I point that out is because, you know, I don't know if it's age specific, but maybe, you know, we'll just overgeneralize a little bit with younger people. Sometimes, and I remember this when I was young too, you get impatient and you like, you know, you start a new job and then like in a few months you want to be vice president. And you can't be vice president, you know, in just a few months when you're young. You have to learn, you have to pay your dues, you have to, you know, of course, if you're smart enough, you know, you can join a firm and advance very quickly. But the patience, you know, and the insight, the foresight to see who you want to align with for future opportunities, I think is very important.
Yeah, it's key. I mean, they always say, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So I truly believe that.
Yeah. So that person brought you over and you had a law career. Now let's jump back into 8Sleep and let's talk about some of the things that went wrong. You got this prototype off the ground. You got a cash offer. You got a signal of demand that someone might want this. Were you going through your own health challenges at the time? What motivated you to like want to be healthy, aside from being, you know, an athlete all your life?
I really think it was being an athlete all my life. Is to me is all about two things. One, I think the foundation is being an athlete, but the other one is I'm obsessed with performance. And I know that by sleeping more, by training, by eating this thing, by fasting, by being a biohacker, I can improve my performance and try to be my best. So then I can grow faster and I can exceed my own expectations. So it's really that drive.
Yeah. So talk about more of the science and the technology. What did you learn in the process of developing your final product?
So what we learn are that temperature is the big elephant in the room in terms of sleep performance, right? So through temperature, you can fall asleep 20% faster. You can wake up 40% less, toss and turn 40% less, get 20% more deep sleep. The other thing we learn is a fixed flat temperature during the whole night doesn't work because your body temperature changes. And so you need a device that is able to capture your biometrics and in real time adjust the temperature based on those. That is what we developed.
What is the optimal temperature then? Or does it depend on the individual?
It depends on the individual, but it's also different multiple times during the night. It's not going to be one. It's going to be multiple different temperature settings.
Gotcha. And the technology in the bed or the mattress detects that?
Yeah. So we can track your heart rate, your respiration, your sleep stages, and also then we adjust the temperature. Then the vision of the company is two things. We want to compress your sleep and save your life. Compress your sleep means how can we optimize your sleep so you can sleep only 6 hours and get more rest than when you were sleeping 8 hours. Saving your life means we are going to track everything about your body while you're asleep. In the future, we will scan your body while you're asleep to detect early signs of cancer.
Yeah. It sounds like a very technical, amazing product. Did you have any obstacles in the beginning with development and manufacturing? Did you have any problems or fires you needed to put out in the beginning? What went wrong in order to get it right?
How much time do we have?
Frame this in the context of, you know, other people are doing what you're doing just in other industries, right? So like what lessons can you teach them? What did you learn by some of the mistakes? What went wrong?
A lot of things went wrong. We had no experience at all in hardware. So here I have another funny story for you. So we completed Y Combinator. We are trying to really start manufacturing and the development in China. But things are not really going as we wanted, right? So I go to my wife and I say, I'm going to China. And she says, when? And I say, tomorrow. And she says, oh, wow. And when do you come back? And I say, once I have fixed it. Bottom line, I went to China for a couple of months where we identify all the partners for manufacturing. We found people that could really help us to build this device because we sold 8,000 units in pre-orders. So we had to deliver it, right? And 8,000 units is a lot. So that part was not going well. Then we fixed it. And it was a fun story. Then hiring, obviously I had no experience for hiring hardware engineers or hiring certain type of software engineers. So I think a lot of things were delayed.
Pause for a second. Okay, so you're an Italian native who came, you know, went to London, learned English, then came to the United States. How did you get into Y Combinator? Was that difficult?
Yeah, we got rejected twice. We just got it admitted the third time. So I think we became a use case. Now, sometimes they still pitch us, the partner, to say never give up, keep applying, because even if we know we don't take you the first time or the second time, you could be admitted the third.
Did you want to give up? I mean, tell us that story.
So the story is we apply the first time, we put a lot of effort, we don't get in. We apply a second time with a lot of effort.
Brought the product, you showed them the proof, the science, and they said no? Why?
No, wait. Usually you do an application form. The first time they don't even answer us. They don't answer you if you don't move forward. Then the second time we do the application form, no answer. Then what happens is the third time there is a new partner for hardware, AYC, and we met him. And he says, oh, you should apply. And I say, no, I don't want to apply again. It takes a lot of time. And we already got rejected twice. And he says, no, you have to apply. So I go back and with my co-founders, we debate if we should apply or not. And what we decided is we will make the application, but within an hour. We're not going to spend more than an hour. Yep, we apply and they invite us for an in-person presentation. Then what we do, then the problem is our product is big, right? It's a mattress. And so usually you want to show the product at YC to get in. So we rent a truck and we buy all the pieces of a bedroom. Okay? We go there and we create a bedroom in the hallway of Y Combinator with the mattress and the nightstand and the lights going on and off and all that thing, which was extremely embarrassing. Yeah, because there were all the other YC founders that were there with their computer because they are doing a software product, and there was us with the mattress in the middle of the hallway. And I think we got admitted just because we had the courage of building a bedroom in the hallway.
You know, so many lessons there, right? About rejection. Sometimes it's a no for now. Sometimes you have to make adjustments. Could be your pitch. Could be the time, you know. Could just be someone's having a bad day at Y Combinator. Who knows, right? I think there's a lot of lessons about rejection and resilience and maybe not taking no for an answer when you know that your product is great. Okay, so you get Y Combinator. Then I want to go back to China. So you're an Italian native who learns English well enough to, you know, do well at a major firm. And then do you have to learn Chinese? I mean, what did you do when you're in China?
No, Chinese, but I could speak English. But it was interesting to rent an apartment in China, to rent an office in China. Google now doesn't work. And Skype, at the time, I think I was using Skype, was not working.
Yeah. I mean, but again, no fear, no hesitation. You bought a one-way ticket to China and you just... Did you even have a place to stay or did you just go and figure it out?
No, I started in an hotel and then we figured it out and then we found an apartment and then we found an office and then we found the people.
Yeah. I mean, fearless, like truly.
Naive, somewhere in between naive and fearless.
I love it. So let's focus now a little bit on health because, you know, I'm at a certain age where I'm really focused on my health and it's becoming more and more important. I lost my dad in 2019. He passed away way too soon. He was 69 years old and, it was really hard for me. I felt like, you know, he had so many more years to go. And then when I lost him, I really started reflecting on my own health and wanting to be here longer for my family. And so I've been really trying hard to, you know, eat better and focus more on my fitness. And we were talking off camera that sleep has been something I've been trying to hack myself and figure out. Talk about the health benefits and some of the science behind what you guys are doing and how it works and how important that is.
Yeah, let's start from the last point, right? So health is based on three pillars: nutrition, fitness, and sleep. And actually, the first pillar is sleep, because if you sleep 2 hours per night, there is no nutrition. You will start eating carbs to compensate, and you cannot train. So sleep is really the foundation of everything. Then there is nutrition, and then there is fitness, but they are after sleep, right? There is plenty of medical evidence that sleep has a major impact on your longevity, on your heart rate, on your blood pressure, on everything you do. There is evidence that the way you eat is directly correlated to sleep, meaning when you're sleep deprived, you have different type of cravings, in particular for junk food. So sleep is the foundation of health. Then there are a couple of different ways you can work on your sleep. But again, the big elephant in the room, so the fastest way to improve your sleep performance is through temperature. Because your body temperature already changes during the night, so it's something that physiologically is already part of, you know, your body. If you look back 3,000 years ago, right, the temperature in the caves was already changing during the night, right? Because the sun drops and then it gets colder, and then there is the sunrise, and so it gets warmer. So what we are doing with our technology is exactly what is already part of your body. We just enhance these temperature changes in your body to maximize temperature performance.
I'm sure, like most men, you know, I run really hot, so I sleep, you know, with not many clothes on. I like a fan or the air conditioning on in the summertime, and I tend to sleep much better. But I'll tell you a story about me and my health. So I started, and this is why I love your product. I went to the doctor to try and figure out my health. You know, I was having some health issues. I was having like little heart palpitations, and I thought maybe I had heart problems. And I got my blood panel taken out, and I've talked a lot about my headaches too. I had headaches. And this just kind of started all of a sudden. And, you know, each doctor I went to see, the neurologist, you know, for my headaches, or the heart doctor, cardiologist for my heart, each doctor kind of told me, well, you look pretty good, actually. You know, you eat well, you don't smoke, you eat pretty clean. You know, you're getting older, that's true. You're not a young man anymore, but at the same time, all things considered, you look pretty good, but still I didn't feel good. And the heart palpitations actually ended up being a symptom of sleep apnea. And I didn't know much about sleep apnea. My doctor discovered it in a blood panel because he said, oh, your red blood cell count is high, higher than normal. And when I told him about my headaches and the red blood cell count, he said, I think you have apnea. And so when he said that, actually it triggered the idea that, yeah, once in a while, I kind of wake up like, you know, feeling like I wasn't getting enough sleep. So anyway, long story short, I went to the doctor who works on apnea. And right away, what do you think he did? He just gives me a face mask to put on, you know, and it's like wearing a starfish on your face. If you've ever worn that mask, it's terrible. It turns out I did a sleep study and I have mild apnea, but I could not get used to the face mask. And a part of it was pride because, you know, I didn't want to sleep with my wife with a mask on my face. You know, I'm romantic, right? And my wife and I have a great relationship, and I thought the mask was very inhibiting and I didn't want to wear it. And so I started trying to hack my own health. You know, I returned the mask. I refused to wear it. I started doing more research on how to hack my health and how to hack my sleep. And that's how I kind of found you guys. It's because, in combination with, the Wim Hof method of breathing and cold plunging, cold showers, I ended up losing maybe about 10, 15 pounds. And I think my headaches were also due to some dehydration, but also due to fatigue. So I was waking up multiple times during the night. Anyway, I think it's terrific that you're trying to address what happens before, right? Like treat the real problem, not just diagnose after the fact. Like my doctor just gave me this mask that I'd have to wear for the rest of my life. You guys are trying to get there before the problem happens, addressing the cold issue, helping hack sleep. And I just find that like revolutionary. You know, like that's what I was looking for personally, to have better health.
Yeah. I mean, preventative health is the key, right? That is how you will see healthcare completely changing in the next 3 to 5 years. Startup like us are disrupting the space.
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that. You know, tracking my roots, where I came from and where I'm going. But like I say, man, always said it, it's not about the destination. It's all about the journey. Ain't nothing changed but the weather. The dangling carrot that hang from the rear view. Your dreams in the past ain't nowhere near you. Backseat drivers got nothing but 2 cents. Shotgun riders too biased, they all liars. I should get an A for effort, I'm too tired. But I'm never giving up, that's why I'm kinda admired. Role model, like it or not, I gotta play it. Sugarcoat the rhyme sometimes, but still say it. Said I was quitting at 40, it's just a fib. I'm still a kid that's wiping the food off of my bib. You ever wanted something so bad that you could taste it? Cried over every opportunity wasted. Good and bad news, which one you want first? Either way, you pick the